monthly visit with Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Go there and have fun. It is just extraordinary what you'll find. You'll find reality. You'll find the truth about World War II and thereafter. It's just an amazing thing to see it all there. It's one of the most unique websites in the history of the Internet, period. And there's much more to come. All right, let's go back and look at our pictures. And if you aren't loaded up, look in guests for Harry's name. Look under that, and you'll see photos. And load that page, because we're going to go down and take a look at the first photograph of an architectural, I don't know what you'd call it. Oddity. That was the word that came to mind. This is a very, very unusual thing. Tell us about it.
Yeah, photos 3, 4, 5, and 6. It's all the same thing. Now, this is a building, a house. It goes underground, too. What you're seeing here is only two stories above the ground. It's in the shape of an eagle. It's right on the coast. It's in Uruguay. And nobody seems to know the actual story behind it. We found out it was built 1945 by an Italian.
Huh.
But we don't know exactly why. It's commonly called the Eagle's Nest there, but that's just colloquial use.
Well, it has to be a tribute, Harry. It's got to be a tribute. Yeah.
And some local rumors were that it was supposed to be a lighthouse or a beacon for German U-boats. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the case or not. I think that's a little far-fetched, especially since it was built the year the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
But the home Hitler and Eva Braun went to live in was also built the year the war ended. So what was this thing supposed to do? I don't know, but I'll know in a couple of weeks because I'm going.
Are you
going
to go to it? Oh, okay.
Oh, you bet.
Oh, yeah.
Through it, on it, over it.
When did you first learn about this thing?
Just a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah. See, the thing that sets Shark Hunters apart from any other author.
All alleged historical organization, sure.
Yeah, we have a network all over. We've got members in 77 countries. Mm. Some of them are retired spooks. Some of them are serious researchers.
Mm-hmm.
One of our members, I don't know if he wants his name on the air or not, so it just won't do that. He's the guy that translated Hitler in Argentina and also Hitler and the Secret Alliance, translated them both into Spanish and also into Portuguese.
Nice.
They'll be, as soon as I get back from South America, we're going to add those to our repertoire. He told me about this place, and he sent me these pictures. And
you must have been
amazed.
Well, that's I don't know either, but it's one can certainly speculate. And it goes underground. You'll find out. We'll get to see pictures of it when Harry gets back.
When I get back, you're going to have a show that's just going to rock the heck out of people.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're going to squeeze it into 2 hours.
We'll do 3.
Okay. Whatever you say, boss.
Yeah. No problem. Now, we'll do as much as we need. We'll do 2 nights if we have to. That's a gorgeous beach. I don't know what city is off in the distance there, but it looks like just a beautiful location.
It is.
Reminds me of Santa Barbara a little bit. Just a little.
Okay, I don't think they got
that's where I'm
like
from.
That in Santa Barbara. But
No, but the view down the beach. I lived on the beach for 9 years, right on the cliff. A cliff not unlike the one you're looking at, about the same height, a bluff, a small bluff, and the view from my backyard. I had an old sofa out there on the edge. And I leave the house. It was an old house, about 70 years old, full of termites. And you could hear them crunching at night. I'm not kidding.
Oh, God.
But they didn't bother me. Every time they'd eat through a hole in the ceiling, I'd take a hammer and a nail and put a nail in the hole so the stuff would stop dropping out. And I had nails all over the ceiling. Anyway, I'd go out in the back and sit on the sofa. And that very much looks like the view down the beach toward UC Santa Barbara, which would be in the distance in that picture. I could send you, I'll find a picture and show you. It's quite unique.
You know, I don't know what city this is here, or what town, village, whatever you want to call it. I can see the structures in the back, but I have no idea what that is. But I'll know in about another 3 weeks.
Well, that's a pretty tall item, whatever that tower is.
Yeah, that tower, I'll know shortly. Let's see, looking at my calendar, which I have in front of me here, that'll be somewhere around the 10th or the 9th, 10th or 11th.
That's really exciting. I mean, this is a major find, and there's a story here. And maybe some of the city elders will know somebody who knows something. You'll find it if it's findable. So
let me tell you, when I was there last time, January of 14, with my guide, Martine, we were in this one little town of note, and we saw this old man walking down the street carrying a loaf of bread, about a 3-foot-long loaf of bread. His wife had sent him to the store to get bread for dinner, and we saw him and we buttonholed him. We were trying to find out where a certain area was. Turned out he was the postmaster at Xiao Xiao, the ultra high buck resort down in Bariloche. He was the postmaster there during the war years.
Oh my.
We spent 2 hours with this guy.
Oh,
and I
sure.
put it all on video.
Yeah.
And one of our members, Lowell Mix, called in and said that his wife would be happy to translate it for us, and which is great. I'm going to take him up on it as soon as I can find the doggone chip that has all this stuff on it. I got chips and stick drives all over my desk.
That's a real big discovery, and there's still people down there like this man. This eagle, it's called a lookout, for lack of a better, easier term. It's a lookout, and the views are commanding. The night pictures are very intriguing, and almost looks Egyptian-like in a way.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It looks a lot like the Sphinx.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right. So, that will be visited. That's on the itinerary.
You bet.
That's great. Okay, what do we have in photo number 7?
Number 7 has
Schweidnitz
to do
Air Base.
Schweidnitz. That's correct. You see the lines all around it. That was one of the last air bases that was still secure toward the end of the war, the final days. You see the lines around there, the ring where the Russian troops are. It shows where the Russian front is on 3rd of May. That's written on it. This is a hand-drawn chart by another one of our members, SEIG agents, we call them, S-E-I-G, which means Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters Intelligence Group.
Mm-hmm.
And we call him Feldwebel Schultz. And he drew this. And you'll notice right in the center it says Bell with a circle around it. That's where the so-called Nazi Bell, Die Glocke, was taken out of Europe by that the Ju-390. They only had one left. They had three of them, and the third one was not completed when the war ended. This was a 6-engine aircraft that had incredible range, and so the SS troops, some of the best of the Waffen SS troops, were holding back the Russian, the Red Army, while they could get a lot of Ju-290 aircraft out with people and stuff. And then this 390 went out with the Bell on it, and you switch over to number 8, and that's a chart drawn by the same guy, same agent, of a little town in Uruguay where this plane landed on a 15-kilometer-long straight stretch of highway. And if you look on the left side of it, right by where the river runs by, there's a sort of a squashed-up circle-looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that indicates a little woods. And the people down there had set up a quick RDF station there so that the plane could vector in on that, and they landed. And then the plane was all taken apart and discarded. Now, I'm told about this Hunting Hitler comedy show that allegedly Hitler flew somewhere down there on a JU-52 trimotor, and it was taken apart and discarded.
Excuse me? They're trying to say that he crossed the Atlantic in a 52?
No, no, no. He was going from country to country down
there. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. I know. A JU-52 didn't quite have the legs to make it that far.
Now, let me ask you a question, if I might, please.
Sure.
The landing strip for the JU-390 V2, I guess the second plane.
That's correct.
Now, he drew this map from what source? Where did he come up with the information for this map?
He was there in 1969 talking to the air crew.
Wow. Okay. And the plane?
Yeah, the JU-390.
Cut to pieces.
I'm just wondering, and this is, I'm just merely spitballing here, but this is in my book, that they took this airplane apart, that Hitler came to South America on this plane. They took it apart and discarded it. And now suddenly on the TV show, he flew from country to country down there in a smaller plane, and they took it apart and discarded it. I just wonder if that was a trend going on there, or disassemble airplanes, or if somebody borrowed something they saw in my book. I don't know.
It's I think they did, and they've morphed it into a 52 rather than the 390. This is...
That could very well be the case. It's interesting, this Hunting Hitler thing came from a book that was written by Gerard Williams, the little fat guy with the scarf that you saw. Like I said, I didn't see it. It's only been reported to me. I wouldn't waste my time on that. But he wrote a book called Gray Wolf, Escape of Adolf Hitler. And a whole lot of that book, I'm told, reads like stuff in my book. One can only wonder how that happened.
Well, one doesn't have to wonder too long.
And then, after his book came out, a Jewish guy named Noam Shalit wrote a book about Hitler's escape, and Gerard Williams is screaming that this Jewish guy plagiarized his book, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, you clown, where did you get some of this information?
Right.
My book.
Now, there's, theft is now a synonym for research.
Yeah, that's what you said in that email earlier today.
Yeah.
And the one thing, my members who watched this, they're still laughing about it. When they were going to go to the estate where Hitler lived, they came by in some kind of rubber boat, and a guy in a frogman outfit went over the side and snuck up onto the beach because he was trying to sneak up to the house. What, sneak up, for God's sake? Nobody lived there for 40 years. When we went, we just drove our boats right up onto the beach, grounded them on the beach, got out and walked across the grass. And you know, that one, when we were there in 2009, the second time, our boat captain, he's the guy that came marching past with his right arm in the air, and he was goose-stepping, and he told me that he knew who lived there because he grew up there.
That guy's
his
got to be...
was the caretaker.
He's got to be found. And
At least we got his name.
Yeah, I hope you can find him.
His father was, I forget, Ludolf von Alvensleben. We got pictures of him down there now, the father. So, and we know
really?
This guy keeps,
wow.
This guy keeps his boat, too. So, well, like I say, we have a network.
That's really a big find. That guy, he's got a story. That's a major motion picture. Now, this map is very intriguing. The text on it, the printed text, says that the big transport, the 390, is dismantled at a German ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would suggest to me that there are still some major pieces of it laying around.
Well, when I was in Europe a few months ago, I met with Feldwebel Schultz again, and he told me that he had heard, now this is 1969, he had been told that one of the vertical stabilizers, the thing had two vertical stabilizers on it, one of them was in a farmer's barn down there. So we're going to be looking for that farmer's barn. We may wind up empty, but
We'll raise the money and help transport that back to Florida, if you can buy it. That's really amazing. What a piece of history!
First.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there's an awful lot of stuff. One of our members who was in the Air Force during the war, he said they had a B-24 that something was wrong with it, and they weren't allowed to fly it. And he said they were told to demolish it. He said with just axes and big hammers, sledgehammers, he said they were able to take the thing apart in 2 days and truck everything away. So how hard would it have been?
Well, I'm not
there.
Saying they couldn't do it. I'm saying that there may be pieces around, as you well know. We talked off the air some time back about the engines may have been tossed into the river. They may be in there, too. Who knows? This is very, very exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's why I've got 4 weeks set aside. Plus, there's a bunch of people I have to see. For instance, there's a doctor in Brazil who has one hell of a story, and I'm not going into it just yet because it's his story.
I know a little bit about it. It is a huge story.
Yeah, well, of course you do. But we found out that he had been doing this research, but who was he? Where was he? Nobody knew. Well, one of our members out in New Mexico told us about this. Well, she couldn't find the doctor in Brazil, so one of the two German agents that was put ashore in Maine in 1944, was a member of Shark Hunters, and he was a good friend of mine. He passed away, but I'm still in contact with his daughter, who's in Brazil. And so I went to her and said, hey, this is the guy's name, and this is where he's at. Can you find him? She came back, bingo. So we go from
that's
me
amazing.
To New Mexico, to Brazil, to this guy's town. And I'm supposed to go spend 3 days with him and see all the photos, files, et cetera, that he's got. And he said, bring a camera, take all the pictures you want of all these files.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, and that's what sets us apart from others. I'm not patting myself on the back.
You should.
Too much,
you deserve it. You're doing the work. You're actually walking and talking your whole mission in life, and you're doing it. You're making things happen. These things are of enormous historical importance. I know some of you don't understand, but some of you do, and many of you listening are members of Shark Hunters, and we're very honored to have you with us, of course. Another thing for you who aren't and don't understand World War II, there's a remarkable fascination for all things German. And they're finding crashed Messerschmitts and FW-190s. You can buy a piece of a crashed 190. It costs you some money. But this is a real piece of history. Anyway.
True. Yeah, that's true. One of our members who's now passed away, he was my son's godfather. He lived in St. Petersburg, Florida. And he made a hell of a lot of money up here in Hillbilly Heaven, where I live, north central Florida. He used to come up here. Now, this is back in the 60s and 70s. He'd post wanted posters all over the place, offering $500 to anybody who could show him a downed American plane in the swamp or wherever, because there were over 400 training bases in Florida during the war years, and they were crashing planes left and right.
400?
He'd find them. He'd find the plane, pay the guy $500, and he'd truck the plane back to his warehouse in St. Pete, restore it, and sell it for a hell of a lot of money.
So yeah, those are probably a lot of Stearmans, too. They used those during the war, early part of the war.
Planes. He found a couple of P-40s in a swamp up just north of me here. The measure of the pilot, once he thought he was good enough, was to fly underneath the Highway 19 bridge at Cross City. And this one pilot apparently didn't get down low enough, and he clipped his vertical stabilizer. And, of course, when you have no vertical stabilizer, the plane rolls, and he crashed. And this guy found the plane. The guy with the pilot was still in it, the bones. And So, you know, the Army just left him there back in 1940-something because it was too much trouble to go into the swamp to find him. Wow. So there's a huge amount of money in that. So from an economical standpoint, I can understand it. We're not making any money at it.
Yeah.
As you know, I don't take a salary from this. Nobody at Shark House takes a salary. We got great volunteers. I've got a project now, people looking up stuff for us. They're not getting paid. Our translators don't get paid. Our attorneys don't get paid. Just people have their hearts in this.
They do. They do. Okay. Picture number nine. What's this?
Picture number nine.
In Misiones. Misiones,
or however you pronounce that. We're told this is one of the houses that Martin Bormann had.
Mm-hmm.
Except if you see the house, there's a satellite dish. I don't think Bormann had a satellite dish back in them days.
No.
But there's the obligatory tunnel and bunker system under the house.
Hmm.
So we're going to be stopping there to see this house. And number 10 is also the same house.
This is Argentina?
Right at what they call a TBA, tribe border area, Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay. I'm not quite sure which side of the border that's on.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's Misiones, then yes, it's Argentina, right up near the border.
Wow. All right. Well, just look for the real estate documents. I'm sure Bormann's signature is still on there somewhere.
We'll find whatever we can find. Then you look at 11, 12, 13. Now, if they look familiar, I'm told that these were shown on that particular TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys discovered these ruins.
Oh, right.
These are the same pictures, the exact same pictures that we're showing here. And it was taken by one of my guys in 2007.
Did they steal your pictures? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know where they got these pictures, but they're the same damn pictures. And my guy, Martin, took these pictures in 2007.
That's funny.
As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it right here. The little computer puts up the date. It was taken at 12:27 p.m. on 6/8/2007.
Huh.
With a camera model DSC-P150. So, and, you know, the pictures have been around since 2007.
Funny.
And it's been reported to me, like I said, I never watched that series, but it was reported to me that it was claimed this was one of Hitler's hideouts. Horse pucky, it was not one of Hitler's hideouts. It was just a place that some guys used for safe houses up at at that part of Argentina. Bormann allegedly was here for a while. But we're going to find out.
Now, when he got there, did Perón kind of take him in, do we think, and set him up, help him set up?
Well, Bormann was brought a ton of
money.
I mean, a ton of treasure and finances and gold, and he had to coach to all the banks, and so he pretty well, the escaping Germans pretty well propped up Juan Perón. Because in 1945, he was a colonel without a lot of money and no property. And 1 or 2 years later, he was a general. He was president of Argentina, and he had a ton of money and some very nice houses. And one of the houses, they called it the presidential palace. It wasn't just one hell of a mansion. He was backyard to backyard with a house that was owned by Dr. Joseph Mengele. They were friends.
Yeah.
But as long as the money stayed there, and we followed the trail through from the Swiss banks down to Banco Transatlantico Alemán. My pronunciation is horrible, but it means the German Transatlantic Bank. Through the director by the name of Ludwig Freude, and they were funneling money to Bormann, who then redistributed the money to Perón and to the De Spina, which sometimes is called Odessa, although they're not quite the same, but helping the escaping Germans to get set up in Argentina. And Borman also organized, set up, initiated, whatever you want to call it, about 750 businesses down there. So
750 businesses, German-owned, I guess, German proprietors, families, and so forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. As a matter of fact, I think Jim Mars touched on that in his book, The Fourth Reich.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've been skimming through the book. He sent me a very nice signed copy of it, and I haven't had time to read it.
Well, he'll be on with us when we do the remote viewing program.
That's on, good, yeah. Jim's a good guy.
He really is, yeah. Okay, now.
I just had a drink of Pepsi.
It's all right. Just so it isn't diet. Don't drink that diet stuff.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
No, I don't drink diet nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
My kids were never allowed to have any of that artificial sweetener stuff.
No, it's deadly.
Yeah. And it tastes horrible, too.
Just let it sit at room temperature for a half an hour and see if it still tastes sweet. No way. The pictures, number 12, this is out in the middle of, I guess, the woods or something, right?
Let me
supposedly.
Look closer. Oh, yeah, the number 12 with the people dancing?
No, this prior to that. The ruins.
Oh, 12, I'm
Misiones,
sorry. I'm ahead of myself. Yeah, the 11, 12, and 13. It's all the same building, just shot from different angles,
I think.
I'll have a bunch of more of my own photos when we come back. We've invested in a pretty nice Nikon that takes very high-res photos.
Good.
And your poor webmaster is going to go nuts cutting them down from like 6,000 DPI.
Uh-oh. Well, just if you can change it so it's not like 10 megabytes per picture, I think you have that option. It's not hard to do. Just lower it to 500 kilobytes.
Well, when I store the pictures on my computer, I store the original picture and I give it a number like this one you see, 1601JR12.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll cut it way down and call it 1601JR12X.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones I put into my magazine because, you know, when we send the magazine out by the internet, you can't have ultra high res photos in there. It'll take like 5-10 minutes for somebody to download the thing, and you just can't do that. So we cut them down too, but we keep the originals, and the originals don't have all the writing on it. I do that to discourage cyber pirates.
Right, you should. This house, the clowns on TV are calling this house one of Hitler's homes.
Yeah, they said Hitler was there for a while, and that's just not true.
Have any of them gone to the Mercedes Bavarian style house on the lake at Bariloche?
Yeah, that's the one I just mentioned. The guy made it look like it's some kind of clandestine.
That house.
Swam ashore. Yeah, that was the one down there. That Hitler.
Oh yeah. Well, all he had to do was ask a real estate agent to take him out there. It's for sale for $40 million.
Yeah, right. That's last I heard, it was 40 mil. But it, like I say, it's a huge piece of property,
mm-hmm.
and various different guest houses and other outbuildings. The boat shack. But of course,
well,
the boat
I'm
shed
hopeful
is falling apart.
Someday you can get back with that guy that took you out there on the boat, who grew up there.
Yeah.
I mean, that man has. Yeah, he has seen. He may have photo. Who knows? It's just remarkable.
Yeah, I didn't think of it at that time. You know, they say we're too soon old and too late smart.
Too soon old and too old smart. Too quick smart.
Too late smart.
Too late. Yeah, that's a Pennsylvania Dutch expression, I think.
Is it?
Something like that. All right, let's go to picture number 14.
14.
See the dancing girls.
Yeah,
and the accordion
kind of
player.
Dancing guys and a guy with an accordion, yep. And that picture and 15, 14 and 15 were allegedly shot by Dr. Joseph Mengele.
His own pictures, huh?
Yeah, in Paraguay.
Uh-huh.
This was sent to us by one of our people.
So they, in other words, somebody just mailed you the pictures and say these are from Mengele's own personal photos.
Yeah, and that's one of our agents.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big score. Wow.
Yeah, 14 and 15.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they had different images of beauty back in them days, because I wouldn't consider these girls really...
They wouldn't have crude on your yacht, that's what you're trying to tell
me. That's for sure, no, that's for sure, yeah. You're remembering back to when I went off to live in the Bahamas with the blonde and the redhead.
Yes.
That was a million years ago.
But I wonder what... This looks kind of like the 50s to me, early 50s.
I would think that's probably a good guess, late 40s, early 50s.
I mean, look at the guy's hair on the left in picture 15. That's early 50s hair.
Yeah, if you remember the old show, what the heck was it, Surfside 6, Kooky?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the guy that parked cars, he had that kind of a hair. Ed Burns.
That's right.
And there's a guy right behind him, they're playing the drums.
Now, that's a bass drum. I can see a cymbal.
Yeah.
And I assume there's going to be a snare off to the right. Maybe not. Maybe he just, he might have just thumped the bass. Who knows? Whatever it was, it got those girls dancing.
And they looked happy.
Whatever. Okay, picture number 16.
Number 16. Yep.
Now, is that the camera that may have taken that picture?
I would guess. We don't know for sure, but that would be a good guess. And his room key is there, and maybe that's a passport. It's in a little box in the Tyrol Hotel.
Wow. Have you seen that stuff personally, or did that picture come to you as well?
The picture came to me as well, but I'm intending to see that picture shortly.
There's a postcard there. That's a postcard in the center on the bottom.
Yep, yep.
And I wonder what vintage that camera is. That'll be easy to trace.
My guess is it's probably a Leica. The Germans used to use Leicas.
Look at there. And there's a coin on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And it's in some kind of little box.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That is neat. Now, that's a... Tyrol, is that a hotel? That's what we're looking at next, at 17.
Yeah,
so.
Number 17. That's a Tyrol Hotel in San Bernardino, Paraguay, which is just about, I think, about 15 or 20 clicks west of Asunción.
That's German architecture.
Yeah, no kidding. The Grand Hotel in Asunción, mm-hmm, and this Tyrol Hotel allegedly were frequented pretty heavily by Bormann and by Mengele. And allegedly the owners back in those days were friends of these guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing, I don't know for sure yet, but I'm guessing the people who run the hotel now are probably the kids, mm-hmm, of the previous owners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm expecting them to have some stories to tell me.
I'm sure. How do you think they came by Mengele's possessions there, that little box?
Well, Mengele was staying at that hotel for a while.
Okay. And now, just for our listeners' sake, recount his end. How did he pass?
Mengele?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the official story was that he was swimming and he had a heart attack.
Ah, yes,
and
of
died.
Course.
But it's hard to buy that one, since he was afraid of the water.
Uh-huh,
so what was he doing swimming?
Yeah, yeah.
And also another one of our sea agents, a fellow who was an active agent in the Secret Service of, what the heck, Holland, Dutch,
mm-hmm,
Netherlands. His boss had taped an interview between himself, the boss, and Mengele, and it was 1 year after Mengele died. Amazing what they can do with modern medicine.
It certainly is. Wow.
So he was going to get that. He was going to get a copy of that taped interview for me, but suddenly it disappeared. I got the feeling his boss told him, "What are you, goofy or something? You can't be sending that out."
Yeah. Well, it sounds like another hit, a murder.
Yeah. So many guys died strange deaths.
I'd
like to say they send them through Dealey Plaza in Dallas, which of course they didn't send them all through Dealey Plaza, but we know who got assassinated there.
Yeah. All right. Hold on a sec. We got to do one more break, and that it looks like a very warm and homey kind of hotel. It's got a nice feel to it. The colors are nice.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. All right, hold on, gang. We'll be right back. Just a second. Okay, and back with you and Harry, sharkhunters.com. Harry's off in 2 weeks for a month-long research expedition to South America, most probably Argentina and maybe Paraguay. You're going there too, huh?
Yeah, Uruguay and Paraguay in addition to Argentina.
Very good.
And maybe Brazil.
Well, this one's stacking up to be, you're going to be busy from the time you land till the time you take off.
Yeah, this is true. The first, the second, the third, and the fourth, I've got meetings with different people, including the one, I think I told you, fellow appeared out of the blue, who's a friend of a friend, and he's Argentine. He's Italian, living in Argentina from an Italian family, and he wrote a book about the German nuclear research laboratory down in Bariloche, the one that was built 2 years after the
You're kidding.
War
he wrote, the guy wrote a book about that?
Yeah, and he asked me to proof it because he had it translated into English, and he wanted me to proof it to make sure it read smoothly, which it did. The guy's English is better than mine, I think. And I was halfway through the book, and I asked him, how the hell do you know all this stuff? Turns out he's the former director of the Argentine Atomic Energy Commission.
Oh,
so
my.
I'm having dinner with him and his wife.
Oh, this is fascinating. I can't wait. What you may find out down there about that program, that is just astonishing.
Yeah, yep.
This is
going
to be maybe the richest expedition yet.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, as a matter of fact, that's right. The way I found out, I was talking to him. I was halfway through the book, and I said, "You know an awful lot about this island." I said, "Have you ever been there?" And then he says, half a dozen times a month. He says, I'm the former director of the Atomic Energy Commission down there."
Wow.
Oh, okay.
He knows all. Well, if I might suggest the obvious, take as many pictures as you can, or email them to him so he can label and identify them. What those relics are there? We've looked at them
doing
on the program
already.
Here. Good.
And if you remember, in one of the early programs, and you'll also see it in my 2008 trip to Argentina, I described an area up on top of a little bit of a rise that looked like a parking lot for a bus, although there are no vehicles ever on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it looked like the roof of something. Yeah, it turns out it's the roof of the reactor. The reactors were down under there. I don't know if they're still there or not. But
they actually built reactors?
Oh, yeah. According to some sources, they did indeed achieve cold fusion.
Huh.
According to other sources, they lied about it. But, they had reactors.
Well, this sounds like hot normal reactors that would be cool with water. I don't know.
Except they were using, I think what it was, well, I was a nuclear weapons specialist in the service, and of course, thermonuclear there, you're using deuterium and tritium.
Heavy water.
Triggered off of a uranium U-235 explosion. But there they were using, if I understand it correctly, they were using lithium or something else like that that also produced incredible heat. They're talking millions of degrees of heat, which, of course, would power steam turbines, I guess. But
This is fascinating. So you have his manuscript, and you're going through it, right?
Yeah, I've finished it.
Uh-huh.
And there were practically no corrections to be made, a little comma out of place here and a hyphen there.
Sure.
And so I'll be meeting with him. I suggested to him to just load it up with photos. I just proofed the raw manuscript for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a zillion places in there where he can insert photos. There's another book that I'm going through right now that was written by this one doctor that I'm going to be meeting with, and I'm not going to get into too much detail, but we've all seen pictures of a dead Hitler in the bunker, and we know Hitler was not dead in the bunker.
Right.
There are other prominent people. We saw pictures of their dead bodies in Berlin in 1945, and they wasn't dead in 1945 either.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another story. After I talk to that doctor, we'll see what he gives me the green light to talk about.
I can't wait. Now, if there's any way for you to copyright this material, because the ghouls out there are going to jump on it and continue their livelihood on the back of Harry Cooper. We don't want that.
No, I know we don't want that. They don't even send me a royalty check and not even a thank you note.
No, they would never mention you.
But unfortunately, the way the laws are written, if you change, I heard this from one of our attorneys, if you change a couple of words.
Oh, it's 1% or 2%. It's some tiny little amount.
Whatever it is, yeah. Because research facts cannot be copyrighted.
Right.
If I publish a paper saying that the sun is going to come up tomorrow, well, we all know that, so I can't copyright that. And so all I have to do is change a little bit. And or in some cases, there was a guy, I'm not going to mention his name, he's you and I who know who I'm talking about, he's got a doctor's degree in something nobody ever heard of. He wrote a book called Nazi International, and he copied almost the entire book out of my work, and also another member, Carter Plimpton Heydrich, who wrote a book called Critical Mass, which had to do with the uranium that came to the United States on a surrendered submarine. And he did what was required by law. He credited me and Plimpton.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you credit the guy whose work you're using, I guess the law says it's okay.
Wow.
And in the case of the hunting Hitler thing, I'm an American living in the U.S. The guy who wrote the book that they based their series on is a Brit living in France. Where do you go to sue anybody? As a matter of fact,
no, you can't. Suing anybody anywhere, anyhow, is a waste of time and a waste of money.
All you're doing is financing the attorney's lifestyle.
That's all you're doing. That's all you're doing.
Abel Basti, for instance, a guy who I consider to be an incredibly good researcher on the Third Reich in Argentina. He lives in Argentina. And he fell in with these guys, Gerard Williams and his crew, about 3 years ago, I guess it was. And from what he tells me, Williams was throwing money around like mad, and he got kind of seduced by the force, if you want to call it that, and he let Williams see a whole lot of his stuff, and suddenly Williams come out with the book, and didn't bother to reimburse Abel the way he said he was supposed to, I guess. Abel filed a lawsuit against him. But like I say, the guy is a Brit living in France, and Abel lives in central Argentina. How are you gonna do that? It's next to impossible.
Totally impossible. Okay, quick question here. the Germans are rumored to have actually had created viable atomic bombs, but didn't use them for several political reasons. Any truth to that in your research and your knowledge, Banks?
Well, I've heard the story too, but
they were supposedly sitting in rail cars on the side of some tracks in Czechoslovakia or somewhere.
Yeah, I've heard that, but I can't say yay or nay. However, we do know that once the war ended, our nuclear scientists got really smart, and we had a whole lot of equipment we didn't have before, and we had a whole lot of fissionable material we didn't have before.
And it is said that some of that fissionable material went to Japan on a one-way trip.
Well, it was due to go to Japan. That was on board the submarine U-234.
Well, it ended up going to Japan, but it was dropped by a B-29.
Well, yeah, it wasn't delivered the way
those two bombs look so different if you look at them, Little Boy and Fat Man. No comparison.
Yeah, one was, if I remember correctly, one was using the implosion method. The other one was using the Navy type, the Navy gun type. But and I think one was plutonium. Boy, my Spec Webs training was a long time ago, 1958. So. Pretty fuzzy in my head now.
Well, it's said that some of the uranium from that submarine was used in one of the two bombs.
Yeah, I believe it. And that was the premise in that book that Heydrich wrote. Because the uranium on board U-234 just disappeared. Nobody knows where it went.
Right.
There's no paper trail. And one of my guys, who's very, very thorough, a guy named we call Pizarro, informed us that quite a bit of weapons-grade uranium was also on that submarine when it surrendered. Now, I spent a whole day with the skipper of that boat, who also had been the demolitions officer on board the Raider Atlantis.
Huh.
But when I started asking him about the uranium on board his boat, he just said, well, chemistry was my worst subject.
He really begged. He begged off. He just wouldn't touch it.
He said, I don't know anything about it. And I talked to the cargo officer, Carl Pfaff, who emigrated to the U.S., and he said, I didn't know what it was. All I knew was the size and the weight so I could trim the boat properly.
Wow. Right. Yeah. Well, some of these guys, hopefully we'll talk while they're still here, and there are quite a few of them still around.
Yeah.
And I just hope that they help fill in the blanks that you have been so magnificently working at for so long. Have a great trip. I'll talk to you before you go. I hope you come back, as you expect, with all kinds of treasure, and we'll do as many programs as we need, and you can put as much of it up as you want. I'm always just thrilled.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'll copy your comment there. I just hope I come back. It's going to be a little dicey.
Well, stay in touch with email, will you, when you're on the trip, if you can.
Yeah, I sure will. I'll bring in my tablet with me, so we'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you, Harry. Wonderful program, as always. Just great.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Go there and write to Harry, and he'll send you their new magazine. It's just a very special offer, very special treat. Okay, we'll be right back with Hour 3 in a few.